The Taj Express. The Taj Express, a series of contemporary Indian stories with pictures painted in sound. Prepare yourself for a unique radio experience as we take you on a journey across India on the Taj Express.
Today on the Taj Express, we present two stories, This is Impossible by Himanshu Joshi and After the Storm by Atiya Hussain. The first story, This is Impossible, is a view of an absurd world where strikes and clashes with the police seem to be an everyday occurrence and where the old world of set values is rapidly receding and growing increasingly meaningless and irrelevant. The second story deals with the Hindu-Muslim conflict during the partition of India in 1947. It is viewed by a woman writer, Atiya Hussain.
Even when he was dead, he remained lying there unattended for a couple of days. I saw that during these days his hair and nails had grown. That a dead body's hair and nails grow gives you a creepy sensation. They have fully opened the window opposite me. I can see now the neem and eucalyptus trees. Working girls' hostel. Vidya Bhaven. Sky-high residential buildings for those blessed few of the External Affairs Ministry. And then rows and rows of buildings. In the same direction, perhaps, there is the noon sun shining brightly over some newly built buildings. Gunpowder smoke clouds are rising from somewhere. Now, windows of almost all the buildings around are open. Every doorstep is choked with a crowd. At the rooftops, people are standing in rows like railings. They have fear, suspicion, and curiosity on their faces. Having used tear gas first, the police have now opened fire, they're saying. Panic prevails in Connaught Place. Many buses have been burned to ashes. Buses which were standing on the roadside are seen burning. Black smoke is gushing out from here and there towards the sky. People are running like rats. It is an anarchy which nobody wanted, a terror which nobody knew before. Yet I remember such an atmosphere prevailed sometimes when I was a student. August 15th was not celebrated then. We were not independent then. But then there was an enthusiasm, a full-blooded passion for freedom. Now I don't see much in it. All exist, and so do I. Nothing more. All is without purpose. I turn around and sit on my seat. Files, dirty files, open, half open, lying all over as though spreading out their wings. There are some letters, too, lying without any order in today's Chelan. And the margins are inscribed dates and dates. Letters go yellow, traveling from one office to another. When were they written? By whom? For what purpose? From where did they start? Has all gone down as history and been forgotten? I collect the files and move them aside. Meanwhile, Bajan, The peon of our section comes running.
Saini Saab, it was terrible.
I should have been surprised by the mention of the word terrible, but I am not. He comes still nearer, sad eyes above his long, thick moustaches are dilated with fear. He's panting like a dog.
Lift men have run away, God knows where. They have abandoned their lift. I came running, climbing hundreds of steps to the seventh floor.
And?
And Mahabharat is being repeated where Sardar Patel's statue stands. Police and sadhus are having an open bout. 8 or 9 people are lying dead in a pool of blood. Dead! I have seen it with my own eyes, God.
There are signs of extreme tiredness on his face. A good many chairs are vacant. But he cannot sit. He keeps standing. My face has not changed. How is it that I am unperturbed even after having heard such terrible news? Why is there no reaction in me? Even the strangest thing does not surprise me. I take it as a matter of course. Everything is natural and possible. I sometimes think even if people picked up their morning paper and saw in bold headlines, such and such continent sunk into the ocean last night, 20 million people drowned, they would merely skip over to some election news or market rates and start sipping their tea. The peon stands for a while, his head hanging, and then he leaves me alone. He feels that he has committed a mistake, announcing such important news to the wrong man. It is natural for him to be repentant. I begin to leaf through a file. On a full sheet of paper, some woman named Harbinder Kaur has doled out her woeful tale before the institution known as government. The illiterate one, since at the end of the application there's no signature but a thumbprint, writes that her husband, Pritam, does not give her anything to eat. He only beats her. Even since their marriage, he never even once got her a stitch of clothes. For the last 3 years, she laments she has been a drain on her old parents. Now they, too, are unable to maintain her. She has no money to go to the court of law for justice. Hence, what should be the way out for her? Poor Harbinder. What should be the way out for her? Without money, how can she seek justice in this wretched world? How should a ruined household be restored? I was pondering this problem, a terrible one really, when the peon came and put an urgent file on the table. I know from the size of the file that it must be Natation's case. Natation's uncle is in the ministry. He, the uncle, does not rank himself anything less than a minister. He phones every second or third day saying the demands of his competent nephew must be met. He must be transferred wherever he wants. Even if the doors are barred for others, they must be opened for him. How shall the doors be opened so that I can get his uncle off my back? I prepare the precy and make a plea that Natation be put in a Sputnik, like Luna 9, and allowed to rise to his desired height so that he may snatch the stars he wants in one sweep. Natation can go in a Sputnik. But how will I reach home? Tantia says Delhi transport buses have stopped. All traffic has stopped. Parliament Street is under curfew. He announces this so casually as though he's seen a new signboard. I pity the brains of these baboos. I have the feeling there will be a new tribe of these baboos within the next 2 or 3 centuries. The baboos who will be denied the right to sit among the cultured, and then there will be the laws enacted for this backward and oppressed class, and the social reformers will bid their lives to get them back their basic human rights. How is it that our society has fallen so low that every day it creates new problems? I leave my seat and proceed towards the canteen. One can always find half the office sitting there all the time. But today the office is not there. I sip my tea alone. Then I see some people standing in the next room. They're talking about a sadhu. The sadhu, so it seems, rushed into the office, though a few seconds before he had been sipping his espresso. Where people have the right to starve, the right to die without medical aid, the right to kill anyone without his fault, which means that they have the right to do anything. Why shouldn't there be the right to take coffee or move about naked? Here I should have scolded the Baboos for their backwardness, but I deliberately don't. Oh, the crowd outside has dispersed. It looks all clear, even before its due time. Some smoke is, however, rising at certain places. On Curzon Road, people are moving to India Gate as if forming the rear of a funeral procession. The white ambulance cars are rushing to the Safdarjung Hospital with the wounded. Those with cars and scooters will never have a better chance to give a lift to the working girls returning home on foot. Many people are dead, they say. But to me, it does not seem likely. Where people don't know how to live, how can they know death? Hence, they cannot be dead. All this is rather improbable.